Hello and welcome to episode 20 of Meenal's World. This week I haven't added any of the intro music or the outro music. I just wanted to talk and I just wanted to pour my heart out, really, because this is my first proper episode back. I had Karina on the last episode mainly because I just wanted to finish it off, because we had a part one and part two, but it's taken me a few weeks to get back and sort of have a bit of a reset, really. That's what I really needed, and I hope that I can continue a streak every Friday. But I really wanted to just go into my personal experience postpartum. I feel like it's something that people don't really know about, probably because people don't talk about it enough. And I personally felt quite frustrated, like, why don't people understand? But then I realized that it's not something that people really talk about, so how can people get this information? And this is why I'm doing this podcast, because if I put my story out, not only is it helping me process everything and go through this sort of healing journey, but if someone else listens in and experiences something similar themselves or with anybody else, they can find solutions or find ways to help. It's really all about just having some perspective. And it's going back to the last few months, really. We've seen such big movements happen across the world with Black Lives Matter, even during the pandemic with coronavirus. And we've learned so much. And we've all really been very active in trying to educate ourselves. And I really want to make sure that we continue that passion to keep learning, to keep educating ourselves and other people so we can create a change. So here it goes. I want to talk about my personal journey postpartum. It's what they call the fourth trimester. It's something I never even thought about. I didn't even think about it because I was just so concerned about getting through the three trimesters of my pregnancy and just getting through this pandemic. I didn't even sort of picture or visualize what things could look like after Radhika was born. So if I just look back at the pandemic itself has affected so many people in so many different ways. And personally, I feel it affected my mental health a lot. And mainly because I wasn't able to work because of obviously my situation. But also I wasn't as active. So my physical health wasn't great, which affected my mental health. My mental health affected my physical health. So it was just snowballing through, especially the third trimester. And there was a constant sort of big grey cloud, a constant feeling of sadness and heaviness because of Nurse Mary, who passed away. And if you go back to one of my previous episodes where I talk about why I actually protested, you know, I talk about her story and what it was like to see her leave her family behind, and to see her kids almost on a weekly basis, to see her husband, you know, just reliving those experiences was quite difficult. And I still remember just driving on the motorway and just driving to see friends or to even just get some fresh air. I remember just driving to get Faluda one day, because I was getting so frustrated just sitting at home, and I would just cry. And the pandemic affected me in ways I never would have imagined. And I think I'm still processing it. I think I'm still figuring out how the pandemic affected me. And the reason I'm trying to figure it out is because the way I feel now is just an accumulation of the last few months. And we can't also forget that I had the legal challenge as well, and there was a lot of pressure, you know, to when I decided I wanted to take the government on. A lot of people told me it wasn't worth it, and a lot of people did say, you're not doing the right thing, and a lot of people did say, you can't make a difference. So I've never done anything like this before, so I kept questioning everything I was doing. I wasn't sure if I was going to achieve what I wanted to achieve, and I wasn't sure if anybody would really care about me. So all of these things were going through my head. Lack of routine had an impact. Not working. My mental health, my physical health, the pressure of the legal challenge, everything. Now add on to that no support system. So no family around me. My third trimester was spent in such a way, I just thought that I would have my parents around, my mom would be feeding me all this really nice food, and I had none of that. It was the complete opposite. And I'm sharing this because I think a lot of people are quite oblivious to what a pregnant woman actually needs. And I'll tell you what they need. They just need lots of love, lots of attention, and just a hand on the shoulder to say, everything's going to be okay. Imagine someone tells you you're going to get the thing that you've always wanted, but you have to wait 9 months. And in those 9 months, you're going to vomit, you're going to feel sick, you're going to get very heavy, you're going to get breathless, you're not going to be able to continue your lifestyle like you do, you may not even be able to go out. Just imagine that. So that's what it was like. So if anyone around you is pregnant, regardless of their trimester, just show them some love. Really just be nice to them, be nurturing, and be kind and ask them what they need. It was only the time leading up to my birth where, not my birth, Radhika's birth. Sorry, I haven't slept in like 7 weeks, so I am trying to make sure that I string my sentences properly. But in time leading to the delivery of Radhika, my parents managed to come round, and even then that was a big question mark, we weren't sure what was going to happen. And when my parents came, it was only then that I realized how much I actually needed them, how much I actually needed my mum to take care of me and to feed me and to be there with me when I was in pain, whether I was struggling mentally or whether I was getting exhausted physically. And I could see sort of the pain in her eyes when I was upset. And I don't know if it was my hormones or my emotions, but it really created a connection in between us. It really created a connection between my mother and myself and my dad as well. You know, he started talking about his childhood a lot more. He opened up more into what it was like being raised in one of the poorest parts of Delhi. I think one of the craziest stories he told me was that when he came to Gibraltar because he actually wanted to just run away from home. He just got fed up because his youngest sibling was born when he was in his early 20s. And his argument was that, well, our family is so poor already, we can barely feed ourselves. He got angry with his parents and said, why have you brought another child to the family? I always thought he moved to Gibraltar solely for the purpose of just finding work and finding money. But to know that there was much more to that, it was a much deeper story, was quite fascinating. I can't believe he's telling me now, 27 years later. So my own journey through parenthood has been so important for my own relationship with my parents, and that's created a big, big turning point. But on the day of the C-section, I woke up that morning and I was in tears, and I was scared, I was terrified, I wasn't sure what was going to happen after my mother left, because as I said, I didn't realize how much I needed her. Her company was such a big, big, big support, and then she's going to leave. I was going to lose all of that. I apologize for Radhika's cries, but there's really nothing I can do about that. I mean, it's just part of me now. She's an extension of me, so you will hear her cry. You might even hear her fart or poop or I don't know. Anyway, I remember going into the surgery, and when I went into the hospital, so I just had to pause the recording because Radhika started crying. I think I had to just make it stop somehow. So I've brought her with me now, and now I'm recording with her on my lap. And as I said, I have not edited this podcast, and I'm not going to edit it because this is just my life now. Anyway, as I was saying, I went into the hospital and I was in tears and I was terrified because I just couldn't picture my life without my parents again. I know it seems really weird. I lived without them for most of my life, especially in Prague when I was studying medicine. But I just didn't want to let them go. I remember sitting down and the consultant coming in and saying, okay, Milo, so we're going to take you into theatre. in 10 minutes. And I genuinely thought it would take a few hours. And, you know, she said, 10 minutes, we're going to take you into theatre, we're going to operate, and that's it. And when I went into theatre, everything went so quickly. Everything happened just like factory line production sort of thing. One thing after the other. Everyone was so efficient. And then before I knew it, brother girl was born. And I remember bringing, when they brought her out, they were like, oh, this is your baby. And I was still in, not, I wouldn't say shock, but I just couldn't believe we were here, you know, after all that time. And not even just 9 months, remember. Having a baby for me was something I've always dreamed of. Having my own child to nurture and to love is something I've always dreamed of. So to be in that moment then, I just wasn't able to absorb it or even feel grateful or happy because I was so dazed. I didn't really know what was happening. And immediately after her birth, I remember they moved me into the recovery room and the midwife just popped Radhika into my breast and said, feed her. And she tried to help me. She said, this is how the baby latches on. This is how you need to try and feed. But then also she had lots of other patients, so she couldn't really spend much time with me educating me on how to feed the baby. But she was very quick. And Nishant was sat right next to me as well. And a part of me had to... I think Radhika's upset I'm talking about her. Yep, she agrees with me. But when she put Radhika to my breast, I didn't really know what to do. And Nishant was sat right next to me. And a part of me just felt like I had to pretend like I knew what I was doing. Because, I mean, as a doctor, I would have felt like an idiot not knowing what I was doing. And I know that sounds really silly now that I say it out loud. But I didn't want to look like a fool because obviously I've been talking about having a child for so long. Surely I should know everything. I should have done all my research, all my reading, and this should have been an easy task for me. So when she gave her to me, I mean, I tried to feed her, but it was so, so painful. And I had to just put on a brave face and pretend that there was no pain. And I think the happiness was sort of overriding everything at that time because I was happy. I was very, very happy. And I wanted to tell everybody about her. I wanted to talk to my mum. I wanted to talk to my dad. Remember, nobody was allowed except my husband because of COVID. No one was allowed in the hospital. And I wanted to call everybody, video call everyone and share the news. But I was also in a lot of pain. And when they moved me to the ward, I had to spend one night there by myself. No visitors allowed. I remember... They had to give me morphine because, again, a lot of pain after the surgery. And I was bleeding a lot as well, which meant that a nurse had to come in and constantly change me. And just unfortunately, that night, they were short-staffed with nurses and midwives. So that meant that every time I buzzed for help, it would take a really long time to come to me. And the only time I asked for help was really just to find out how to breastfeed because I had no idea what I was doing because... When I tried to feed her, it just felt like she was really pulling and tugging away at my breast. And I found that very painful. And I wasn't sure if that was normal or not. I wasn't sure if it was normal to have that pain at the beginning or whether what I was doing was completely wrong. And the lady next to me said to me that she didn't want to breastfeed a child. She wanted the baby to be bottle fed. And these are things I never thought about because for me, the only thing I've been told is you have to breastfeed because bottle feeding is a sign of weakness. Bottle feeding means that you're lazy. Bottle feeding doesn't give the child the same strength. And none of that is true. None of that is true. You can still bond with your baby. You can still give your baby all the nutrients as long as you're feeding the baby. That's the most important thing. You just have to feed your baby and love the baby. That's all it is. So when the lady next to me said that she didn't want to breastfeed, she wanted to bottle feed because she was in too much pain after the surgery, I was like, I never even thought about anything like that. I didn't even have those options in my head. But anyway, I continued to breastfeed. I was in a lot of pain. Nishant came to pick me up the next day. I still put on a brave face. I still had to smile because it's a happy moment, right? It's a very big moment in our lives, I have to smile. That's all I was thinking. I mean, you have to show that you're happy. Don't let the pain override that happiness. Don't let your exhaustion override that happiness. You just have to show everybody you're happy and you're grateful, because people are going to think you're being ungrateful. When I came home, Nishant was very sweet, and he decorated the outside of the house with balloons, and you know, my in-laws were there, and there was mitai, and you know, we tried to make it a big occasion as much as we could, because obviously with COVID, nobody could visit. I still put on a brave face. I went in, my mom did some puja, she did a small prayer for the welcoming of the baby, and I just kept smiling throughout it all, just pretending like I knew what I was doing. My mom kept asking me if I was okay, and I said, yes, I'm fine. And when the baby started crying, I would just pick her up and just pretend like I knew that she needed a feed or she needed a nappy change. The first night, I had no clue what I was doing. I was completely sore from the surgery. And remember, when you've had a C-section, the baby has to lie on some part of your belly or your abdomen, at least for the first, you know, until you find another maneuver to breastfeed your child. Your immediate reaction is to put your baby on your belly and feed the child. And Radhika was sitting on my wound most of the time. And that was very, very difficult for me. And I didn't want to tell anybody I was in pain, because the solution was paracetamol, ibuprofen, painkillers. And that's all I could really take, remember, because I was breastfeeding. So I never told anybody I was in pain, because I thought every mother in the world goes through this. Millions of mothers, millions of women have gone through this. I should be able to go through it too. And I was told by the midwife that you have to feed the child every 2 hours. And I still remember looking at the clock, just watching time go, and just dreading for that 2 hour mark, because it means I'd have to breastfeed. I was so anxious because I was in so much pain. My breasts were sore. My wound was sore. I was still bleeding. I couldn't eat. I had no appetite. And I just remember thinking, is this what motherhood is about? How did my mother do it? How do other women do it? Am I weak? Am I not good enough? Is this what it's going to be like for the next few months, for the next couple of years? Because I want to be that mum who breastfeeds my child until the age of 2. I want to be that mum who doesn't give up on breastfeeding. So when I had to breastfeed Radhika, I remember watching the time and thinking, okay, now it's time to feed her. I would just go into a separate room, because I felt like it gave me a bit of time to try and figure things out. Nishant was very, very good in helping me, because he just worked in pediatrics, so he was able to help, and he was great, but I mean, he couldn't do much in terms of my pain and my anxiety. So when I would go into the room separately, I remember just sitting down there, just looking at Radhika and just thinking, is this how I'm going to feel now forever? Am I always going to be sore when you feed on me? Am I always going to be anxious when you have to feed? Am I always going to be scared when I have to take care of you, when I'm alone with you? How will I do all of this? And there were times where I would sit down and I would just burst into tears. I would just cry, because nothing felt right. I didn't feel like I was good enough for anything. I didn't feel like I was being a good mother. I didn't feel like I was being a good wife, because obviously I had to give all my energy to Radhika. I had, and to some extent still have, very little left to give to other people, whether it's my husband or even my mom or my in-laws. You know, I felt like I wasn't being that super mom that I wanted to be and that I set out to be. And there was one day where I was sat in my room and my mom walked in to see if everything was okay, because I was upstairs for quite a long time. And she just caught me at a bad time, and I was in tears. I was bawling my eyes out. My eyes were just so red and swollen from crying. And she sat down next to me and she said, Meenal, you know when I used to breastfeed you, when I used to breastfeed Akhil, I used to cry as well, because I felt alone, I felt lonely. I couldn't contact my mom, I couldn't contact our relatives in India. And then I asked her, I said, did you have postpartum depression? And she said, but Mila, what's that? Every mother finds it difficult. Every mother cries. I said, not really. Not every mother's supposed to cry. Not every mother's supposed to go through this. Some women do for the first couple of days or for the first couple of weeks. And then usually it fades off because obviously our hormones are everywhere after giving birth. So it is normal. But it was after that conversation I realized my mother possibly did have postpartum depression, postnatal depression, and she didn't know about it. And she had no support either because she was completely alone with my dad. So having that conversation helped me because I realized the mother, my mother, who and the woman who I've seen to be so strong and so relentless and so powerful also struggled. And I think that gave me a bit of hope, knowing that even the best of us can struggle and that's okay. But my breaking point for me was when a couple of weeks back, I went for a walk, came back home, got into the shower, and I think it was an anxiety attack. I haven't slept in 7 weeks, well now it's almost 8 weeks. I haven't been eating well, I'm only eating because I need to breastfeed, but I just don't have an appetite, possibly because of the sleep deprivation. I haven't been exercising, so my thoughts are everywhere. And a part of me also felt quite bitter towards the people who can actually enjoy Radhika. And she's a lovely, lovely baby. She's my sweet, sweet angel, and she's my best friend, and I love her to bits, and I wouldn't change this for the world. But she's tiring. She is tiring, and there are times when Nishant comes home, and I just hand her over, and I say, please take her for even just 10 minutes. Let me go into a quiet room, because she's a lot of work. And of course she would be. She's a newborn baby. She can't do anything for herself. Can't expect her to be washing her own clothes and changing her own nappies. Like, that would be silly of me. But I felt a bitterness towards other people. Like, why can other people enjoy her? And I'm not getting that enjoyment. I have moments during the day where I'm just looking at her and I'm just so in love with everything about her. But that doesn't last very long because either the tiredness kicks in or she starts crying and it's just back to the same thing again. And when I had this anxiety attack or this panic attack or whatever it was, I knew it was bad because I struggled to actually breathe. I was crying. Everything around me just stopped. The world sort of stopped for that time. And I struggled to breathe and I just didn't know what to do. Everything just felt so overwhelming. It just came, it just hit me like a big, big wave. And for me, that was my breaking point. And you know what? I said, enough is enough. I am going to change this now. I am going to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And we talk about depression, we talk about anxiety, we talk about mental health issues. And of course, a lot of it is down to hormones. A lot of it is down to this new life, the pandemic. And I completely understand why this has happened to me. But it's my responsibility to make it change. Other people around me won't change it for me. The pandemic, I can't go back 7 months and just hope the pandemic didn't happen. I can't go back to those people who didn't support me when I told them I was pregnant. Again, you can go back to the episode where I talk about my revealing of the pregnancy and how that was and how people treated me at that time. I can't change all that. I can change my attitude and my reaction to how I feel now. And I can get rid of that resentment and bitterness. So this is when I called my good friend Juggy. And Juggy does online coaching. But the good thing about Juggy is that he looks at not just your food intake, your calorie intake, your physical well-being, but it's also a lot about a journey of achieving your best self. And that's what I really wanted. I realized that over the last few years, I've been falling into this trap, what I call productivity porn, and that's just pretending to be productive, where you spend your whole day looking at how to be productive. How can I make a task list? How can I be more efficient? How can I be more mindful? And you do all this research, Googling and all that, and then at the end of the day, you actually haven't achieved anything. So I was falling into that trap during the pandemic because I wasn't working, so I lost that sort of intensity to achieve what I needed to achieve. And when I spoke to Juggy about it, Juggy was great, and he was very patient with me because I really poured my heart out to him, because for me it was like my last resort. I was like, I don't know where else to go. I don't know what else to do. And now as I speak, I'm in the second week, well, the first week, I would say, of my proper training plan and my nutrition and everything. And yeah, every day is not perfect. Every day changes. I mean, it's 11 p.m. now and I'm recording the podcast. I was planning to do this at 11 a.m., 12 hours ago, when Radhika was asleep. But instead, other things came up, and that's okay. So I'm trying to just learn how to adjust, how to accept what I am capable of and what I am capable of achieving every single day. And that's all about being honest. And I think that's been the biggest learning point over the last 6-7 months. I wasn't being honest with myself. I wasn't being clear as to why I was being upset or why certain things bothered me. It's so easy to blame other people, but I have to sort of make that change now and try figure things out. But I also want to make it very clear that the postnatal depression, whether I have it or not, I don't know. It hasn't been diagnosed. It may be a mild form. It may not even be a thing. But it exists. And it exists all around us. And after the pandemic, it's much, much worse. Next week, I have Dr. Poonam who will come on the show. She went through something, I wouldn't say similar, because what she went through was even more traumatic. And you'll hear her story. And from her story, I understood that there's different degrees of experiences that people have with pregnancy. And the smallest of things can make a woman anxious. Or even the biggest of things can create an impact that can last for so long. I mean, Dr. Poonam is talking about her experience 7 years ago. And she still thinks about it, and she still talks about it. So I'm going to leave it here because I can go on forever. But I just want to just emphasize that I'm not perfect. Nobody is perfect. If you're going through anything, whether it's postpartum depression, whether it's a mild form or severe form, whether you're going through any mental health issues, once you decide to make that change, once you step up and say, I am going to change my life for myself, I'm going to be better for myself, what can I do? And you take the right steps, that's when the change is going to happen. And I know this might not apply to everybody, but obviously throughout the pandemic, we haven't really gone out much, we haven't traveled, we haven't spent the money we usually spend. If you have some savings, if you've got some money on the side, use that to invest in your health. Because that's the only thing that's going to stick. That's the thing that is constant, and that's what's going to be with you for the rest of your life. You know, use that money, use the time you have, even if it's half an hour every day, an hour every day. I'm still learning, and I'm going to be posting my stories throughout the next few months on Instagram. I'll be updating you guys through Instagram mainly on what it's been like. And I hope I can help in some way or another. I hope I can start a conversation. And as we speak now, as I speak now on the 3rd of September, this will be released on the 4th of September tomorrow. My commitment is that every Friday I will show up and release an episode. That is my commitment. And that is something I will look forward to, because I know that's good for me. I know that's good for my mental health. So just think about one thing that makes you happy. Just think about one thing that you want to achieve every week. Even if it's cleaning your kitchen, or even if it's just tidying up your wardrobe, just ticking that off a list will create that sense of achievement. And then you'll want to achieve the next thing and keep going on. So I hope this episode has helped. I'm going to stop talking because now I can feel all my energy come in and I'm getting really passionate about everything. So before I get too much, I'm just going to put a lid on it. And next week we'll have Dr. Poonam on the show. And we have some exciting things coming up. And I say we because I'm bringing more people onto the team of Meenal's World, behind the production and behind everything else. So stay tuned for everything else. And please do follow me on Instagram, Meenal's_World. I'm also on Twitter. I'm very political on Twitter, so I don't know how much you'll enjoy that. But just share this with your family and friends, and I will see you all next week.